Benjamin Britten is often called the greatest English composer of the 20th century. That could be argued, I suppose, because Elgar and Vaughan Williams were alive in the 20th century.
Right, and William Walton. But I think maybe Benjamin Britten eclipsed the others, especially with the amount of his output of music and all the honors he received while he was alive.
So when you were deciding who to focus on in the World of series this year, he was an obvious choice.
Because of the 100th anniversary, for sure. And I tend to, in the two series that we do every year in the World of, I tend to want to choose a composer that is very, very well known. This year it's going to be Schubert in January. And then a composer that's perhaps a little lesser known. And so I chose Britten.
You've built an entire program around getting audiences to know Britten a little better. Mm-hmm. What are some of the angles that came to your mind when putting this together?
Well, one of the things that I always deal with are certain limitations. We try to do these programs with a smaller size orchestra, chamber size orchestra. And because we do that, we're not able to do the big splashy works of a composer, which tend to be his more mature works. That's sort of how life goes for a composer. So I concentrate on some of the smaller works, some of the lesser known works, and consequently some of the early works of a composer. And I find that really fascinating because there's a lot of music there that people don't get to hear very often. And when people know the later, more mature works, it's really interesting to hear the younger works and to see the germs of what would have grown and would have been developed as the composer went on.
It was interesting to me to learn during the newscast when we were chatting that you have been playing Britten for a long time and even wrote a paper on it.
Yes, I even surprised myself by realizing I've lived with Britten's music for more than 30 years. I, as a student at Yale University, wrote a paper on Britten and his operas. And my first acquaintances with Britten's music were the operas. Peter Grimes, which was a huge, big splash, one of his first operas. And then the two chamber operas, Albert Herring and The Rape of Lucretia. And I've had the great fortune to conduct those two chamber operas and work as a coach and assistant on Peter Grimes and Midsummer Night's Dream. And even one of my earlier opera memories of Britten was going to New York to the Metropolitan Opera when they did their first production of Britten's Death in Venice in around 1974. With Peter Pears in the leading role. That was amazing.
So what are some of the things that set him apart for you?
It's a very interesting style of writing. I mean, it's beautifully crafted just as far as how he puts together the structure of a piece, whether it's an opera or an orchestral piece. And his use of orchestration, what he chooses to present themes, which instruments, which combinations of instruments. And he often makes brilliant choices, even though he's limited himself. In those two chamber operas, they are chamber orchestra. The orchestra is one on a part, even the strings one on a part. And the entire orchestra for Albert Herring and Rape of Lucretia is only about 20 players. And yet these are full-length, three-act operas with beautiful colors and wonderful dramatic effects out of such a small group of musicians.
He seems to have realized how to orchestrate very early and how to make the most of his resources.
Yes. One of his influential teachers was the composer Frank Bridge. And Bridge urged the young Benjamin Britten to find his own voice, to really be true to his own ideas, but to really know his craft, because without that craft, that technique, you can't express those ideas. Britain took that to heart and really developed a way of getting his ideas across that was true to himself and very impressive and very different from other composers.
Right. He was growing up at a time when Elgar and Vaughan Williams were quite ascendant, and their Enigma variations were on the radio all the time, and that style, pastoral style of music might have been inundating everywhere, but he became a young modernist.
Yes, he did. He actually didn't like the music of Elgar. I think he thought it was too stuffy and too plush in a certain way. He wanted something a little more sparse, a little more spare, a little more honest in a certain respect. And so he went a different direction. He was not as popular, perhaps, as a young composer as some of those others may have been, but he got noticed, and he got early broadcasts of some of his new compositions, and that put his name on the map.
I'd like to listen to one of these early compositions. It's still one of his most popular, something from the Simple Symphony, perhaps.
Right. And there's something I have to tell you about this. The Simple Symphony is just for strings only. Charming four-movement piece. Each of these movements was taken from an early piano composition of Britten. The tunes are from piano works that he wrote between the ages of 9 and 12.
Let's listen to maybe the most fun. It's called Playful Pizzicato. Benjamin Britten's Playful Pizzicato from the Simple Symphony, Opus 4. And we are sitting here with Maestro Raymond Harvey of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, who will be leading a concert called The World of Benjamin Britten Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall on Western's campus. More information at kalamazoosymphony.com and ticket information at milleraudatorium.com or by calling 387-2300. And it was fascinating to know that he took the tune from an earlier work. It's sort of the definition of prodigy when you have a child writing dozens and dozens of pieces.
Oh, hundreds. I read a statistic that I still have trouble believing. They said that when Britten was 16 years old and entering the Royal College of Music as a student, he already had a portfolio of 737 works he had written. Now, surely, some of them were probably just little tidy things, but 700 works at the age of 16.
Where did he even find the time?
I know.
With all his schoolwork.
There was an adorable thing in one of the biographies saying that when he was 5 years old and had just started playing a little bit on the piano, he decided to compose some music, and so he wrote something and showed it to his mother and asked her to play it. And it was just a bunch of horrible dots and dashes and scribbles on a piece of paper. And he remembers the look of horror on his mother's face when she saw that. And she then decided she needed to teach him something about musical notation.
What else do you know about his parents and his childhood?
His father was a dentist. A dental surgeon. Apparently his father had wanted to be a farmer, but that didn't work out, and so he studied and became a dentist. He was apparently a good dentist, but never liked his work. Kind of a stern man, had no interest in music whatsoever. Benjamin Britten's mother, on the other hand, was an amateur singer, supposedly had a beautiful mezzo-soprano voice and sang in lots of choral groups. And she was determined that her little son, he was the youngest, would become a great musician.
And you mentioned Frank Bridge as an important teacher. Yes. Is that the first important teacher that came into his life?
Yes, it really is. He had some notable piano teachers as when he was a child. But Frank Bridge, who was well known at the time, was kind of bombarded by Benjamin Britten's mother, urging Frank Bridge to take a listen to this young piano prodigy. And Bridge, under duress, listened to the little Benjamin Britten and also saw some of his early compositions and was very impressed, and so took him on as a student.
He went to the Royal College of Music in London. Mm-hmm. And continued with Frank Bridge there, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. According to the bios, he didn't get too much out of the school, but he still got a lot out of Frank Bridge.
This original voice that he was encouraged to find, how did he go about developing?
Well, I think part of it was that he was a very scholarly young man. He read a lot. He was fascinated by many things of Shakespearean history, Greek mythology, and poetry. He knew the works of Thomas Hardy. He linked up later in life with several English poets of some repute. And so his music has a real intellectual basis to it. It's not just emotion and tugging on the heart sleeves. It has an underlying logic, and perhaps that was different than what other composers were doing at the time.
Let me ask you if the playful pizzicato or any music from the Simple Symphony is on the program on Sunday.
Yes, the whole Simple Symphony is on the program on Sunday. There are four movements. And it's funny that I stumble over the title because all the movements have alliteration. The Simple Symphony's first movement is called Boisterous Bourée. And then there's a sentimental saraband, and also a frolicsome finale. So those, along with the pizzicato movement, are the four movements of the work.
We know that he was determined to distinguish himself perhaps from some traditions in England, but string orchestra works are so very English, and they're
yes.
so well done.
Yes, they are. But his sound was different, what he had the strings do. Case in point is the Young Apollo, which is based on the Greek mythology. And this is a very early work of Britten. The idea that he would write this not only for strings, but for a string orchestra with a separate string quartet as a featured voice, and then a piano soloist, which Britten himself played the piano in the original performances. It's an unusual combination of instruments. It's a short piece and has sparks of what was to come later in his use of string colors and in his use of driving rhythms.
As a pianist yourself, looking at this piano part, was he an accomplished pianist?
He was a brilliant pianist, and even as a young artist, he was quite known for his wonderful technique. It's a difficult piece for a pianist, but it's not impossible, and a lot of it makes very good sense as far as the way it lies under your hands on the keyboard.
And I'm curious to know if you or another soloist
no,
will be...
No, I'm not playing this because it would be a little tricky to play and conduct this. The piece does need a conductor, and the piano part is very busy. So our principal pianist from the KSO, Reiko Wada, is going to be the pianist on this.
Well, let's listen to Young Apollo. You're listening to WMUK 102.1 FM, music NPR, local arts and news. And the concert is this Sunday at 3 o'clock, The World of Benjamin Britten. More information at KalamazooSymphony.com or MillerAuditorium.com. Piece by Benjamin Britten called Young Apollo, and a very ecstatic kind of piece for piano, string quartet, and strings, and a very early piece by this fascinating English composer. If you've just tuned in, my guest is conductor Raymond Harvey, the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, which will present The World of Benjamin Britten in story and music on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. More information is available at KalamazooSymphony.com or by calling 387-2300, the Miller Auditorium box office. So, Young Apollo, this is a depiction of a young Greek god, is that?
Yes, it was apparently when Apollo was to be the new god of beauty. And so the piece is showing him throwing off his mortal soul and shining in the sunlight of the new young Apollo. They also say it's interesting that it's an A major. It was a key that Britten used for sunshine and brilliance almost throughout his life. So
he was not yet 20.
No,
at
no,
this point,
no. I think he was 18 or 19.
I can see, you know, some of the older professors at the Royal College of Music scratching their heads.
Yes, of course.
This
of
music,
course, you know,
he's clearly a precocious young man.
Yes, indeed, and unique, really distinctive. On the program, even though we're doing a lot of his early works, there are two pieces on the program that we do that are later works of Britten. One is particularly quirky. It's called Concert Piece for Jimmy. And don't ask me how I came across this one. I really don't know. But the Jimmy in the title is Jimmy Blades, who died just recently. He was a famous percussionist in England. He was the go-to percussionist. He performed lots of Benjamin Britten's music. He performed in all his operas. And whenever Britten wanted a certain percussion effect, he would ask Jimmy. He'd describe what effect he wanted, and Jimmy would come up with the perfect answer to it. I loved reading about this Jimmy Blades. He was not only a great performer, but a great lecturer, had lots and lots of students. They just flocked to him. And Benjamin Britten wrote a tiny little 2.5 minute piece so that Jimmy Blades could use this piece when he went on some of his lecture series. The piece is for, unbelievably, timpani and piano. And so I'll get to play that on the piano with Mark Guthrie playing timpani on the concert on Sunday.
How many timpani are you going to need?
I think he needs at least three for this, maybe four.
Well, good.
It's a charming little piece that I don't think there's anything quite like it.
Sure.
But that'll be fun.
Oh.
The other piece that's a late Britten piece on this program, it's actually the last large orchestral piece he wrote. It's the Suite on English Folk Tunes. He had written one English folk tune orchestrated piece many years previous to this, and then decided he would fill out a suite by adding four more movements. And they're all English folk tunes and folk dances from the 16th century that he has gussied up into a modern orchestral language. I wish I knew more about Britain history to know these pieces in their original forms because they're fascinating titles. One is called Cakes and Ale, one is the Bitter Withy. And the Bitter Withy, Withy is like a collection of branches or thorns that you would strike someone with. One's called Hankin' Booby, which they say is also Looby Loo. This one called Hunt the Squirrel, which sounds like a Appalachian fiddle tune, and then a beautiful sentimental tune featuring the English horn called Lord Melbourne. But these works, this is from 1974,
Really?
and Britain died in 1976. And so it was a very interesting collection that he put together of these old English folk tunes, but in a very wonderful, mature Britain orchestration.
Cakes and Ale. That sounds very authentic.
Yes, doesn't it?
Yes.
Doesn't it indeed?
And that would be a real highlight for me in the audience, is to experience what yet another great English composer did with these simple traditional tunes of England, of which there were so many,
Oh,
and
yes.
many composers took such inspiration.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
So you're taking his music all the way from the very beginning until his
So
last
just
days.
about the very end, right? The one thing we're missing on this program is any of the vocal music of which Britten wrote
It's
tons.
almost another concert.
Yes, that would be a complete another concert or two. The closest we'll get to vocal music is a piece that concerns the oboe with string players. This was a piece that Britten wrote when he was still in college. He had won a competition with a previous piece, and so he decided, let's try again, see if he could win twice in a row. He did not win the second time, but this second piece got a BBC broadcast, which was quite an accomplishment for a young college student. The piece is called Fantasy, and it is scored for oboe, violin, viola, and cello. Kind of an unusual combination. They all are kind of their own characters in this. The oboe often rides on top while the other strings play a little march melody. But things get kind of agitated in the middle. Very interesting arc to the piece as far as the structure goes. It actually comes back full circle by the end of the piece, almost an exact mirror to what had begun at the beginning of the piece.
There's that intellectual
Oh
aspect
yes,
you were talking
oh
about.
yes. And it's the sort of thing that you don't particularly hear that, especially on a first listening, but when you study it more, you are just fascinated by how he's put this together.
Well, since it's a more extensive piece, I think we will pick it up a few minutes into the work
Okay.
and see where it progresses from there.
Okay, great.
Well, we've experienced just a little bit of the fantasy for Oboe and Strings by Benjamin Britten, his Opus 2 work. It's on the program this Sunday for the World of Benjamin Britten, presented by the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra and hosted and conducted by my guest, conductor Raymond Harvey. More information is available now at kalamazoosymphony.com and at milleraudatorium.com. Ticket information also available at 269-387-2300.
I have to say, we really enjoy presenting these programs to the community. It's someone once described them as terrific music appreciation programs for adults. I had an audience member who said he wishes that his music appreciation classes were this much fun when he was in college. It's a great chance to explore in depth something behind the music. To know something about this composer's environment, his upbringing, how his mind worked, and how he came up with these pieces. And the program is a no-intermission, 90-minute program. It's a great afternoon, and people usually go away not only pleased to have heard the music, but really overjoyed to know the music in context.
Well, audience members, music lovers in Kalamazoo can see you showing your appreciation and enthusiasm for the music in pre-concert lectures during the symphonic series. But this is really the opportunity for you to really connect and share that this enthusiasm for the music you make your life.
Yes, and I learn so many things when I'm researching these composers and finding out about their lives. I mean, it really is fascinating. One of the things about Britten was that he grew up on the coast in England. He grew up in a little town way on the eastern part of England, and it was a seaport town. And his early images and early oral references were, of course, the sea. You could hear the waves crashing on the shore. That's what he grew up with as an infant, as a child. And so that sound and the smell of the saltwater air, that was all part of his soul. It makes great sense that he would go on to produce an opera about fishermen called Peter Grimes.
And Billy Budd.
And Billy Budd. And we, with the Kalamazoo Symphony, get to perform some of his music from Peter Grimes on our regular Miller Auditorium Symphonic Series. In February, we'll be doing the 4C interludes from his opera Peter Grimes. And those are stunning pieces with the sound of a storm at sea, with the sound of seagulls flying overhead, just beautifully depicted in orchestral colors.
Well, personally, it was the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra mm-hmm. that got me started with Benjamin Britten.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
But what really got me and got under my skin and into a sense that here was a truly original voice was listening to the 4C interludes.
Yeah, they're beautiful pieces. Of those 4C interludes, perhaps my favorite is the slow movement, which is supposed to be depicting a boat at sea at night. And the whole movement is about the rocking of the boat and the lapping of the waves on the sides of the boat. It's just beautifully, beautifully done.
Well, I'm glad you saved them as full performances for a symphonic series concert.
Yes.
The hallmark of the World of Series is a lot of information packed into an easy hour and 15 minutes or so.
Right.
And it really sometimes rolls by rather quickly with humor and with some earnest pathos, because not everybody's life is all happy.
No, indeed. We also have lots of slide images of Britten and his life and his whereabouts and his friends. You get a visual impression of him as well as an oral impression.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you come in and talk about the concert with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Is there anything else we can finish with here? I have something I picked out of Benjamin Britten as a pianist. We have a recording of him with cellist Mstislav Rostropovich.
Oh, great, great.
And they were good pals, you're
saying.
They were
very good pals, very, very, very wonderful friends. And Rostropovich premiered a lot of Britten's works. Rostropovich's wife was the soprano for the premiere of the War Requiem. They had a long history together.
Well, folks, you won't want to miss this World of Benjamin Britten, hosted by my guest Raymond Harvey. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
My pleasure.
More information is available now at KalamazooSymphony.com or MillerAuditorium.com. 387-2300 is the number to call for more information on tickets. And here's Mstislav Rostropovich and Benjamin Britten with music of his teacher, Frank Bridge.